Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 31st and final day of May, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start off today with a story from the Better Late Than Never files. And it's actually way late. This comes from the Daily Mail's coverage, and it says Republicans are finally, now they didn't put that word in there, but I will, finally going to hold FBI Director Wray in contempt. And yeah, what took him so long? Because every American that's been paying any attention whatsoever held this guy in contempt years ago, and rightfully so. So it says at least some Republicans in Congress are finally going to hold him in contempt, or maybe they will anyway, for refusing to hand over documents allegedly detailing at least part of the Biden big guy $5 million plus, and that's just the part we know about, bribery scheme with who knows how many foreign nationals, everything from Ukraine to the Communist Chinese Party. But this one, yet another tip of a massive iceberg, the FBI is just plain in-your-face stonewalling. Tuesday, it says, marked the deadline for the treasonous, and I put that word in there too, agency to turn over an unclassified internal FD-1023 form that apparently details the arrangement by the big guy and his crime family for an exchange of money for policy decisions between the then vice president and a foreign national. Said Representative James Comer of Kentucky on Tuesday, the FBI has informed the committee it will not provide the unclassified documents subpoenaed by the committee, and he added the FBI's decision to stiff-arm Congress and hide this information from the American people is obstructionist and unacceptable. Yeah, folks, and it's also consistent with what they've been doing for year after year after year after year, but now they seem to keep doubling down. It says on Wednesday that he and Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa will be holding a telephone call with the scumbag whoremeister in chief to discuss the FBI's response a bit further. Well, folks, when it comes to skullduggery and scumbaggery and unconstitutional, even traitorous three-letter agencies, if there's one thing we've learned by now, it's don't hold your breath. And while we're on the subject of Congress and scumbags, this one is at least interesting, although, as usual, I doubt that there'll be anything come of it. It appears, says a piece from the Gateway Pundit, that righteous conservative fury over the McCarthy sellout to the Biden Fuhrer and those pulling his puppet strings, and the so-called debt ceiling, which isn't a ceiling at all, folks, it's just a balloon going into orbit, has reached a new boil. Christina Lela has reported that the House Freedom Caucus left open the possibility of filing a motion to vacate the Speaker's chair and get rid of McCarthy if he tries to push through that garbage debt-to-infinity deal. Following a press conference, Politico asked Representative Dan Bishop of North Carolina, a member of the Freedom Caucus, whether he'd support a motion to vacate the chair, and he replied, quote, absolutely. It's inescapable to me. It has to be done. But he added he needed to see whether or not other members had the courage to step forward as well. And you already know the answer to that now, don't you? With the exception of a very few. And your host can't help but think that they're probably the very same ones that knew exactly how this was going to play out when they tried to keep this rhino sellout from getting the position in the first place. Because this was basically all baked in the cake months and months ago. Following that, we've got some more interesting, if not almost good news from the War on Children front. The shares of one of America's most repugnant retailers, Tranny Target, continued to plummet, says another piece from the Daily Mail, for an eighth straight day on Tuesday as the retailer faces its biggest losing streak in five full years. Shares fell 3 2/3% on Tuesday, resulting in the once popular but now self-destructive retail store losing a whopping $2.4 billion in market cap amid widespread backlash to its Tranny Pride display, which included what's been called tuck-friendly women's sick swimwear. In other words, they're literally selling kids and perverts so-called swimwear with a place to tuck your junk until you just get it completely cut off. As a result, it notes, Target has lost $12 billion over 2 weeks. And there's no doubt about it. They earned that. A bit further down in here, it says conservatives and even moderates have been boycotting Target since it was revealed last week that the so-called retailer was selling LGBTQ plus friendly slogans on clothing. Personally, I think groomer garb is more appropriate. Things like trans people will always exist, gay, and live, laugh, lesbian. And many of them have correctly been pointing out that the chain is grooming children, pointing to a tweet that reports to show a tuck-friendly girl's bathing suit with extra crotch coverage. And as you might have suspected, a number of people are calling this a Bud Light situation. And at this point, I can't help but hearken back to the so-called Jonestown Massacre at the Jim Jones cult in Guyana over 40 years ago, where over 900 men, women, and children committed or were forced to commit suicide by drinking the Kool-Aid. a phrase that's since become synonymous with self-destruction. Now we've got corporations doing the woke, super PC, public-private partnership, ESG thing, and drinking the Bud Light. And this is kind of funny, folks. I did a couple minutes worth of research this morning. As you probably know, Kraft Foods, the maker of Kool-Aid, has denied that it was real Kool-Aid that was actually used in the Jonestown massacre to kill so many people, including so many children. They say it was a cheap imitation, and they don't deserve the infamy. When it comes to Anheuser-Busch, however, there's no denying they brought it on themselves and deserve everything that people want to heap on them in the way of ridicule, boycotts, and outright well-deserved disgust. So now we've seen other ESG PC corporations like Target and evidently more recently Kohl's drinking the Bud Light. Which kind of leads me full circle today. Obviously, what with the debt ceiling and all the idiocy surrounding it, and the claims on both sides of the aisle that one way or the other, the American dollar is toast, stick a fork in it, there's going to be a default, whether they take action or not. And you know what? Here's the irony, folks. They're both correct. The American dollar is dead, stick a fork in it. The only question is, how long is it going to take to play out? So, all of this turmoil and the fact that your host is among many who've been talking about it, predicting it, and warning that it was almost here for a long time, leads me to spend some time today talking about several insightful pieces dating back to early on in this latest farce that begin to connect some of the dots here, like this one from Jim Quinn at the Burning Platform, who quotes two infamous Treasury secretaries, one former, thankfully, and another, sadly, still in there. First, Hank Paulson, who back just before the infamous meltdown and subsequent can-kicking back in 2008, this is March 16th, isn't that amazing? Exactly 15 years ago, said, quote, "We've got strong financial institutions, ha ha ha. Our markets are the envy of the world. They're resilient, they're innovative, they're flexible. I think we move very quickly to address situations in this country. And as I said, our financial institutions are strong." And we know what happened not too long after that. Well, let's fast forward 15 years to Janet, I don't know which end is up, Yellen, who said this, quote, "I have full confidence, in banking regulators to take appropriate actions in response, and noted that the banking system remains resilient, and regulators have effective tools to address this type of event. Let me be clear that during the financial crisis, there were investors and owners of systemic large banks that were bailed out, and the reforms that have been put in place means we are not going to do that again." Unquote. And let me reinterpret that into English, folks. That means this time around, we'll do exactly the same thing, but we'll call it something different. Writes Jim Quinn, "With the recent implosion of Silicon Valley Bank and, of course, Signature Bank, the largest bank failure since 2008, I had an overwhelming sense of deja vu." And he noted that he wrote an article entitled, "Is the U.S. Banking System Safe?" on August 3rd, 2008 for the Seeking Alpha website 1 month before the collapse of the global financial system. And it was that article, among others, that caught the attention of documentary filmmaker Steve Bannon. At the time, he was unknown, but not so much since then, although I remain that way, says Quinn. But anyway, the quotes above by the lying, deceitful Wall Street-controlled Treasury secretaries are exactly 15 years apart, but basically exactly the same. Their sole job is to keep the con game, the confidence game, going, and to protect their real constituents, the Wall Street banksters. And just as they did 15 years ago, he says, the powers that be once again intend to use taxpayer funds, or at least newly printed money, which is kind of the same thing. There's a subtle technical difference there, but ultimately, folks, guess who takes it in the shorts either way? To bail out the reckless banksters 2 hours before the only solution the feds know, print money and shovel it out to their buds, Michael Burry explained exactly what was about to happen. And he wrote this, dated 4:20 p.m. March the 12th this year. Quote, 2000, 2008, 2023, it's always the same. People full of hubris and greed take stupid risks and fail. Money is then printed because it works so well. Quinn continues that when Biden, Yellen, and the rest of the Wall Street protection team tell you the banking system is safe and they have everything under control, they're lying, just as he pointed out 15 years ago. And then he notes a famous movie, folks, that I still haven't yet seen. I encourage folks to see it, though, because I've heard lots of good commentary on it. The Big Short, Before those days, he says, before the public knew anything about toxic subprime mortgages issued by criminal banksters and then packaged into derivatives and then given a AAA rating by the greedy compliant rating agencies, the Wall Street cabal knew their time was growing short, but he says that didn't keep the lying bastards like John Thane, Merrill Lynch, Dick Fuld, Lehman Brothers, Angelo Mozzillo, Countrywide, Kerry Killinger, Washington Mutual, and others from pretending their institutions were healthy and profitable right up until the day they collapsed. Lying is in the DNA, he says, of every financial executive, politician, government bureaucrat, and Federal Reserve hack. And then he quotes Hemingway's famous line about, hey, how did you go bankrupt? And the answer was, well, slowly at first, and then all of a sudden. That seems apropos today. There are many similarities, says Quinn, between what happened in 2008 and what's now happening again. Bear Stearns went belly up in March of 2008. They were taken over by J.P. Morgan in an arranged marriage by Bernanke and the Fed. The usual suspects assured the country this was just a one-off situation, and the banking system was, say it with me, folks, strong, resilient. The Wall Street banks had been reporting huge profits because they were hiding the massive losses on their balance sheets. Now, this is part of the big key here. And yeah, the more things appear to change, the more they stay the same. If they didn't foreclose on those bad debts, well, then they didn't have to write off the mortgages. So the toxic debt just kept building and being hidden. In the summer of 2008, the banks started to report losses, but they assured investors it was only, again, a one-off, a one-time hit. All was well. The week I wrote my article, Wall Street bank stocks had soared 20% or more because they reported losses for the second quarter that were less than expected. My article cut through all the BS, he said, being shoveled out by the likes of Larry Kudlow, Jim Cramer, the Wall Street CEOs, and the supposed analyst experts who still had buy ratings on all of these bloated debt pigs. My assessment, says Quinn, was somewhat contrary to CBS News's lies. And here he quotes himself. I would estimate that we're only in the early stages of bank write-offs. The write-offs will at least equal the previous peaks reached in the early 1990s. If a large bank such as WaMo, Washington Mutual, or Wachovia were to fail, it would wipe out the FDIC fund. But when and if that fund is depleted, guess who'll pay? Right again. Another taxpayer bailout. What's another 100 or 200 billion among friends? Well, 100 billion, as you know today, folks, is chump change. They're talking words that begin with T nowadays. Merrill Lynch was reporting billions in losses, issuing new stock and trying to survive. They were clearly in a death spiral. I saw the writing on the wall, and again, he quotes himself, how long will investors be duped into supporting this disaster? You can be sure that the other usual suspects, Citicorp, Lehman Brothers, WaMo, will be announcing more write-downs and capital dilution over coming weeks. And by the end of September, Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual were all gone. Merrill Lynch and Wachovia were acquired for pennies on the dollar, and Citicorp became a zombie bank sustained by the Fed for years. My article, he said, was dire. My analysis showed we were in for years of pain and the worst drop in U.S. housing prices in history. And guess what? He goes through the charts, some of the comments, and turns out he was exactly right. I like this quote, though. The consumer is being forced to cut back on eating and shopping. The marginal players will fall by the wayside. Big box retailers, restaurants, mall developers, and commercial developers are all about to find out that their massive expansion was built upon false assumptions. A foundation of sand, driven by excessive debt. And it seems he, as I was quite accurate in my assessment, home prices did in fact go down more than 15%, and they didn't bottom until 2012. The global financial collapse brought an end to the big box expansion phase as many went under and the survivors concentrated on their existing stores. Well, guess what? They got a nice boost with the pandemic a couple of years back, didn't they? Your host can't help but ask, is that a coincidence? Almost makes me want to suggest a new term that ought to enter the lexicon here, bailout by lethal injection. Although maybe it started off with bailout by bioweapon. Continues Jim Quinn, the most interesting part when I go back to look at that 15-year-old article were the comments and the psychology of the crowd that was revealed therein. Despite my use of unequivocal facts, I was branded a doomer, overly pessimistic, and certainly an idiot. Many commenters said the Fed would save the day and it was time to buy the dips. Huh? Sounds like they're still drinking that same Kool-Aid. If they had bought the dip on the day my article came out, they would have lost 44% over the next 8 months during the relentless bear market. So, now the question is whether the current situation is better or worse than we faced in 2008. He goes through a bunch of charts and numbers. Bottom line, hey, guess what? It's a whole heck of a lot worse. I guess I could summarize it this way. 15 years ago, you heard numbers that involved millions. Now it's billions, or in some cases, trillions. All you hear, though, is happy talk and false bravado from Wall Street analysts covering their own insolvent industry. They constantly harp on the fact that mortgage lending is much more risk-averse today, and therefore secure. Of course, the next liquidity crisis is never driven by the same exact factors as the last one was. They make the same mistakes, they just do it in a different way, is the bottom line here. The key factors, though, are always the same, says Quinn. Loose monetary policies by the Fed lead to excess risk-taking by greedy banksters, hedge funds, and corporate executives. Oh, nowadays you could add wokeness, political correctness, and transgender idiocy along with ESG into the mix. But ultimately, something blows up, and the billionaires get bailed out at the expense of the taxpayers, who have been getting devastated financially by the inflation caused by Powell and his printing press. So he says this latest banking crisis that, yeah, say it with me, folks, no one could possibly have seen coming, except any honest financial analyst who understands either math or history, is following the same path as it did in 2008. The narrative about banks not taking credit risk and peddling bad mortgages is being blown up as we speak. But this time, instead of the risk being centered on toxic mortgages like it was in 2008, it's permeated literally every crevice of the financial system due to years and years of 0% interest rates by the Fed. Now, virtually everything is overvalued by 30% to 50% because cheap debt was available for everyone for everything. And extremely low interest rates led to extreme risk-taking by banksters, corporations, home buyers, auto buyers, politicians, you name it. And you've heard this line paraphrased before. I think it might have originally been Warren Buffett. The unleashing of inflation by Powell's policies has led to the tide going out and revealing just who was now swimming naked. Here he quotes an interesting comment from the Daily Mail, and they seem to have arrived late to the party, but at least in hindsight, they can put their finger on a bit of what happened. Silicon Valley Bank, they said, had no head of risk assessment for 9 months before it collapsed, as the woke boss for Europe, Middle East, and Africa was instead busy organizing a month-long pride campaign and lesbian visibility day. And yeah, Quinn puts it this way. While risk managers at banks across the world have been concentrating on diversity and pushing woke agendas about transgender rights, climate change, and practicing ESG investing, they ignored the simple concept that bonds that they acquired at 1% will lose money when interest rates go to 4%. Just as the banks in 2008 were sitting on billions of unrealized losses from the toxic mortgages in their portfolios, the same banks are now sitting on billions of unrealized losses from the newest toxic asset. No, not home mortgages, folks. U.S. Treasury debt. Everyone knows it. It's just math. They've been counting on Powell to reverse course. But wait, with reported inflation still at 6%, he's now trapped. Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank were swimming naked. And when the depositors realized that a bank run had, in fact, already happened, poof, sudden crisis. But the narrative being spun is still that this is a regional banking crisis. Oh, yes, and it's confined to the smaller banks, the ones that don't have Big Brother on their team. The narrative is being spun by the big Wall Street banks and their captured media mouthpieces with the intent that the depositors at smaller banks would panic and then shift their deposits to the so-called safe Wall Street banks. May or may not pan out. Because the truth is that the big Wall Street banksters have massive levels of unrealized losses too, and they desperately need deposits to keep them from facing the same fate as the Silicon Valley Bank and Signature. Those unrealized losses aren't going away, and at some point, they will have to be realized in the near future. Now, this leads your host to pause and say, hey, I can't help but think, and I've suggested this over the last few days, there's probably already a deal in place, because it's not like they really didn't see this coming, and have probably taken some actions. And let's see how Jim Quinn lays it out. Credit Suisse has been the crazy uncle of the financial industry, kept in the basement for years, kind of like you-know-who with the mask. Their demise is a foregone conclusion, he says, but that's been covered up and ignored by those in the know. They appear to be the new Lehman Brothers, though, and they will blow up the already insolvent European financial system and spread a contagion of losses across the financial world. Those quadrillions, and that's with a Q this time, that's 1,000 trillion, folks, in obscure derivatives are an unknown element in the coming meltdown, but you can be sure they won't have a positive impact. Meanwhile, both small and large banks have no reserves left to lend. Debt issuance is the new Potemkin ingredient in keeping this farce of an economic system running. So without debt to finance overextended consumer lifestyles, fund wars in Ukraine, and fund the woke agendas of lying politicians and corporations, the entire facade is collapsing and will continue to. Now, here I'll ask another question. How is it that you think companies can do such stupid things and still manage to make a profit? Look at Disney. Look at some of those companies that used to sell guns, like Dick's Sporting Goods, but decided, the hell with gun buyers. We don't need those anymore. We don't need the core customers that kept us in business. And you can multiply that by so many other companies and so many other industries that it's mind-boggling. Let's show our customers how much we really hate them. Let's fund idiocy. Let's give megabucks to Black Lives Matter and Antifa to fund riots and burn up the inner cities. Let's tell the mothers and fathers of America that we want your kids screwed, and I mean literally and figuratively. Oh yeah, we'll help Big Brother to cut off their genitalia and turn them into little we don't know what's anymore as well. How can companies do things like that and expect to be profitable? Well, not by selling products to the people that they've pissed off. Ultimately, there's one main answer. What do you think ESG is all about? Yeah, Big Brother is the one that's really making the payroll and providing the big bonuses for the big execs that play ball. It took a while, but we've now seen what happened to Twitter. And I'll ask it this way. What kind of deals are already in place? I have a suspicion. We're going to find out. Yeah, it comes full circle. Call it a bailout by another name. Continues Jim Quinn, real wages have been negative for 23 consecutive months, almost 2 years. Interesting. A banking crisis means banks will reduce lending dramatically. Consumers have been forced to live off their credit cards for the last 2 years as their savings dried up and their wages bought less. A deep recession is in the cards, and that's putting it mildly, folks. Consumers are already pulling back and spending less, and what with credit drying up and spending going down, employers across the globe will start laying people off. As unemployment rises, people will stop paying their enormous mortgage and auto loans, which will lead to more losses at banks, just like 2008 into 2009. And guess what? Everybody will look again to the Fed to save the day, and they'll pretend they have everything under control, but they don't. Back in 2008, their balance sheet was only $900 billion. Today, it's 9 times as large, and the relentless QE, while interest rates were suppressed, has left them with enormous unrealized losses on the mortgage and treasury bonds they bought. They let the inflation genie out of the bottle, and now it's ingrained in the economy. Companies who gave 2% annual raises to their employees for a decade are now forced to give twice that, 4% or more, due to Fed-created inflation. And the workers are still getting the shaft, folks. And if the Fed slashes rates and goes back to money printing through QE, the current 6% inflation rate, and oops, here, folks, I have to say, that's the official lie. The real number, according to John Williams and Shadow Stats, calculated the old-fashioned way, is 14% plus, while unemployment is closer to 25%. But even so, even the fake numbers will soon be back in double digits, and if Powell does nothing or continues raising rates, the banking system will almost certainly collapse. His choices are either deflationary collapse or hyperinflationary collapse. And by the way, folks, that's the same two choices that your host has been talking about for as long as I've been doing radio, because it's the only two choices. It's the way every fiat money system in history, always and without exception, has ended. Powell's stuck between the proverbial rock and the hard place, but since he's controlled by Wall Street, he'll probably slash rates, restart QE, backstop the banksters, and screw the average American, as always. Now, Quinn doesn't address it here, but I have. You know the term. It's called the Great Reset, and it involves a replacement that you may have read about somewhere. Quinn quotes what he wrote back 15 years ago on this point, too, noting the U.S. banking system is essentially insolvent, and now he adds the following. We never paid the piper and cleared out the excesses of the previous banking crisis, so the financial condition of the nation is now far worse than it was in 2008. The condition of the average American is also far worse financially than it was in 2008, and probably in just about every other way, too. The financial condition of the Federal Reserve is far worse than it was in 2008. The financial condition of the banking system is far worse than it was 15 years ago. Our leaders, sick, kicked the can down the road in order to give the system the appearance of stability, and we let them do it. We could have taken the pain back in 2008 and let the system reset after purging all the bad debt and bad banks, but we, that would be a collectivist we folks, chose the wrong path and will now suffer the consequences as described by Ludwig von Mises a century ago. And if you haven't heard this one, you should have. It's a great quote. There is no means, he wrote, of of avoiding the final collapse of a boom brought about by credit explosion. The alternative is only whether the crisis should come sooner as a result of voluntary abandonment of further credit expansion, or later as a final and total catastrophe of the currency system involved. Unquote. And as of today, folks, looks like we're still on schedule. A word to the wise, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.